Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I sit down with a couple of UK pastors, Graham Nichols and Mark Bentham. Well, we're feeling fresh after an Easter break, and today we're talking about environmentalism in the main section. To what extent should Christians be involved in this discussion? Is it our duty, as those commanded to care for our world and for our neighbours, to be leading the way on environmental issues? Lots more conversation on this topic in the main section. But before that, we review Freedom, the new gospel-centred EP by Justin Bieber, and we'll discuss the verdict in the George Floyd murder trial. So enjoy the episode, I'll catch you on the other side.
My name is Graham Nichols.
And I'm Mark Bentham.
And I'm Josh Bannister, and you're listening to Ordinary. Welcome back to the podcast. We've had a couple of weeks break over the Easter break. What was your... Give me a highlight, guys. Did you have any highlights over Easter? Some of the lockdown restrictions were lifted, so did you do anything novel?
Hit Bournemouth.
You went to Bournemouth, what, to the beach?
For 4 nights, yeah.
Oh, for 4 nights? Yeah. Oh, okay. I didn't even know you went away. Was that there good? You did you have a nice time?
Very nice. Little Airbnb. Yeah, very good.
Good weather. Nice to be away. You had nice weather for that week.
It was all right, yeah. It wasn't too cold. It was nice. Managed to get the paddleboard out, so happy days.
Oh, nice. That's, well, you've blown anything I've done out of the water. Do you have any highlights, Graham?
Going to Hove Beach and having a breakfast at Fat Boy Slim's Cafe.
Okay. I've not
Is
heard
this cafe called Fat Boy Slim?
No, it's something, you know, beach cafe or something, but it is Fat Boy Slim who owns it.
I see.
I didn't know that. Where is that? I'd like to visit at some point.
It's in between Hove and Brighton, basically. Not far from the King Alfred Centre, just along a bit.
Yeah. So you go past Hove. Morocco's, the Italian.
Yeah, a little bit further west from there.
And the one in the middle, the one that sits in the middle of everything. That
if you're near the Hove Lagoons or something that it's called, that's the cafe.
What did you have?
Do you know what? I had a bacon and sausage sandwich. We actually went there twice for two different reasons. Oh. Well, once on our own, once with some family. And the other time I had a burger, which for breakfast, a really decent quarter pounder burger is really nice.
You had a burger for breakfast?
Oh, yeah, because they're like really well made. They're like made to order. They're not, you know, they're not sort of mass produced.
Right. And, okay, so let's just re-establish. So this is now where the Morocco's the Italian is, and then going towards Hove Lagoon, and it's in yes. between them.
It's only a cafe. It's just a nice cafe.
Is that the one with the black windows outside? It's quite deep.
Yeah, there's a little skate park by it as well.
It's probably got a website, Mark. We'll find out afterwards.
Okay, no, I'm intrigued. You know, Fat Boy Slim, does it play his tunes all day?
Other cafes. It's got a Volkswagen camper van that seems to have his kind of stuff all over it that's parked by it.
Good stuff. Cool. Well, let's pay a visit.
Yeah, man. Little road trip. Maybe
what about you, Josh? Do you have a nice hot Easter time?
I did, actually. Yeah, I did have a couple of days off here and there. And my highlight was probably we went down to Brighton for the day on Friday, I think, and had... there's this place called The Breakfast Club. I don't know if you guys have been to it. I think there's one in London.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's one in Brighton. And it's just one of our favourites. It's just like very American, I suppose, diner-y, like pancakes and stuff.
Nice. Where's that?
That is in the... North Lanes, or is it in the South Lanes?
And it's called the Breakfast Club.
The Breakfast Club. It's the best.
And it does American breakfasts, pancakes.
Yeah, it's so good. Yeah.
Oh, you see, now we're talking. That's I'm not going to Fat Boy Slim's Lane.
Yeah, yeah.
I might go there for a burger at lunchtime, but I'm not going for breakfast. So I'm going Breakfast Club for breakfast there.
But Breakfast Club's open all day, so you could go hit up the burger for the breakfast and then go to Breakfast Club and get some pancakes for lunch.
No, that's just wrong.
Okay, fair enough.
That's just wrong. You've got to get your pancakes first, then burger. Unless your Graham, of course, he likes his burgers for breakfast. That's unusual.
He probably does. Right, we've got a lot to get through today, so we're going to jump into... should we do a review first, or should we do the news first? What do you fancy?
No, you choose, Josh. You're the you're the producer.
I'll do... let's go for a review. If you liked it, leave a review.
What are we reviewing?
Today we're going to be reviewing Justin Bieber's new EP, which is called Freedom, which all three of us have listened to. And the reason we sort of wanted to... Or I wanted to talk about it is because it's... It's got a lot of Christian content in it. You could say it's a sort of Christian EP. I don't know whether he would say that, and I don't know whether that's even a good phrase. That would be a debate in of itself, but certainly there's like gospel and faith all throughout it. And for me, I think when I heard it and listened to the tracks, I was very encouraged personally. I was like, because I think a lot of times we can be a little bit doom and gloom about the way society's going and about the fact that Christianity is pushed to the side and it's sidelined and it's not prominent in the media and it's not, there's no voices that are speaking the gospel or truth in sort of pop culture. So when somebody like Justin Bieber, who has the kind of following that he has, the kind of reach that he has into people's lives, like when he stands up and he uses that platform and says something that I consider to be positive and something about the gospel and some speaks about Jesus in public, like to me that's massively important and significant. And as a Christian artist myself, I suppose, like I know the feeling of putting something out there that you've created that speaks about Jesus and putting that out for secular people to listen to. And I know that, like, even if you're the most bold Christian, there's moments where you find that a bit scary, right? Like any kind of evangelism like that, where you're putting yourself out there and saying something, it can be a little bit scary. So I massively appreciated that for him, it's not like cost-free for him to do that. Like there'll be people that don't like it. And with his audience, you know, the feelings that I have when I put something out there, just magnify that by millions, because he's got millions of people listening to what he does. And so it made me all the more think, like, okay, as a church and as a Christian, me personally, I think we need to really get behind it and be like, this is a good thing. Like, let's pray for him. Let's pray for the people who are around him. I think Judas Smith is an important person in his life as his kind of pastor and these people that are counseling him, because we got to celebrate the wins, right? It's like, I see it as a win. That's a really good thing for him to be talking in public about Jesus like that. What did you guys think of it? We don't really need to even talk about the music style, but you can if you want. It's just more the sort of idea of somebody of that level in pop culture speaking about the gospel.
Just to educate me, what would you call a musical style? Sort of R&B?
Yeah, I suppose so. He's branching out, isn't he? It's getting more experimental as it goes on. It's getting less sort of like pure pop and getting a little bit more interesting, I think, especially his album that he put out a couple of weeks before this EP. But yeah, I think pop, I would just call it pop.
Yeah. If you just took the lyrics, you'd think this is absolutely brilliant, I would say. In that it was explicitly Christian in places, it was kind of reflective and thoughtful in other places. So yeah, I would be encouraged. You just don't kind of, I don't really know enough about him. I've read stuff about his sort of Christian testimony. You don't know how to kind of place it. So I think you're right in saying celebrate the words as good and pray and hope that there's a kind of genuine Christian life going on that's kind of maturing. It sounds like this is the most significant kind of statement he's made.
Mm. Certainly in music, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's very clear. I mean, I think the lyrics are very clear in terms of gospel, even the songs are trying to apply, I thought. And there was somewhere, you know, quoting scripture as well. So, you know, from that point of view, it's very... I think it's encouraging. I think, like you, Josh, I think it's a really good thing to have someone of that level speaking that clearly on Christ. I guess I'm probably a bit more of a sceptic in the sense of the impact. So I think it will encourage the believers. Mm-hmm. I wonder how much it will actually hit the non-believers, but I think we pray that the Lord would do that. I mean, it's obviously a good thing.
Yeah.
I think the danger is that we kind of see these things and think this is it. You know, this is great. This guy is so big, so influential. This is going to be the big win that's going to enable many to come to faith. And I think often it just doesn't. It doesn't work like that, but I think the fact that he's standing up in that way is a really good thing.
Time for news now. Give us your views. News.
Lots of things to talk about in the news this week, but most significantly was last night for us, we're recording on Wednesday, was the verdict in the George Floyd trial. It was three kind of options on the table for a conviction, wasn't there? Second degree, third degree, and manslaughter. And the officer, ex-officer, has been convicted guilty of all three of them. So that's obviously huge, huge news. It's been a massive event that the whole world has been watching. Have you got any reflections on that generally, the way it went, what the verdict was, what the response was from the crowds who heard that verdict around the courthouse, other things like that?
I suppose one thinks it was a fair verdict in from a distance, that is. I mean, obviously, we didn't watch the whole trial, but from it seemed kind of a slam dunk that at the very least it was manslaughter, but it was probably bad enough. So you don't feel like there was some kind of outrage happened. Whether the process was fair, you kind of feel like there was so much pressure on the jurors and on the process that it would have been hard to imagine any kind of other outcome. So I suppose you feel a bit, just in terms of justice, not that there was an injustice that went on, but you just kind of feel like you can't do that for all cases where, you know, politicians and the general public are sort of campaigning for a particular outcome en masse, campaigning for a particular outcome. So I suppose that worried me slightly.
Yeah,
no,
go ahead.
No, I was going to echo that. I think but the significance of it in that country, yeah, particularly of the whole race debate, from a distance, again, it's hard, isn't it? We're not there. But it just seems, everything we read at the moment of just how messy it is in terms of race relations, in terms of how those things work out in the US, then how the police, you know, it seems like every day there's a police shooting of, yeah, of someone. And it makes me grateful, A, of living in the UK, B, for the way in which our police do generally police. You know, like, I think there's, you know, but I think it just shows how complex the situation is, really, yeah, how messy it is, and trying to speak the gospel into that. You know, you see in the church is trying to speak into that, and how they do that wisely, without kind of getting caught up in all the politics of it all. I think it's just a minefield over there, literally, at the moment. It's so messy.
Yeah. It sort of connects with, there was a report from the Church of England, and then there was a documentary on Panorama on BBC, on normal television on Monday night, about racism in the Church of England. And some of the things they talked about, you know, we're not perfect by any means, but some of the things just sounded like outrageously outdated and bad. You know, people saying, are you a proper priest, to someone because they were a black person? And even someone not getting a job for that reason, even though he was better qualified. And you think, did that really happen? Does stuff like that really happen? You know, again, we're not perfect, but it sounded institutionally not great. But it's all highly charged, isn't it? Because probably during the Easter holidays or just before, there was that report came out, commissioned by the government, which for me as a sort of distant reader, I thought, oh, it says quite a lot of quite, you know, critical things about our culture, but it kind of says some positive things, and all the positive things were seized on, and oh yeah, it's terrible, and yeah, they're denying any kind of racism and stuff. So it's really, I'm not saying one's right, one's wrong, just it's highly emotive, yeah, and lots of people, including myself, don't seem qualified to speak on the topic, so it kind of narrows down and polarizes the debate, really. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a big thing going on, and we can only just keep going with the principles like we taught in the theories we did at the church. Mm-hmm. Just keep going with that and trying to apply that and connect that.
It's just seeing every person, isn't it, as those made in the image of God, so, and valuing, loving.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think politically it's going to be, it's quite a challenging time coming up. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem to be getting better. It seems to be getting more tense. Mm-hmm. Maybe racism was worse when I was growing up, but the tensions about it were much, much less. Mm-hmm. And now maybe it's better, but the tensions about it are much, much worse.
Mm. I bet that you thought it was nearly over, but we haven't started yet. It's just like on Sunday you thought we were done, but you still had communion left.
In the main section today, we're going to be talking about environmentalism. One of the inspirations for this topic this week was the documentary called Seaspiracy, which I heard somebody say should have been called Conspiracy SEA. That would have been a better pun, right?
Yeah.
Seems stupid. Anyway, it was a doc that was made by a sort of individual, like a filmmaker who went around the world and filmed all these different industrial fishing practices. And I suppose it's a doc that's sort of like discouraging. Well, it's trying to shine a light on some of the bad things that are going on. It's certainly saying that the way that we're fishing is damaging the sea, which damages the ecosystem, which damages the environment, and it's all just a bit of a mess, and that there's a lot to do with money and following the money, and It's just essentially trying to say that we're overfishing, it's damaging the world. I think that, like, more broadly, so that's kind of a starting point. More broadly, one of the things, I'm glad that you gave us this as an option today, Graham, to talk about environmentalism, because it's a topic that I'm interested in. I don't know a lot about it, but I have questions, and my questions are sort of from the standpoint of understanding that the church has a role in the world and what that role is. So I'll just give this little introduction, and then you can pick up on things that I say, and we can dig into some details. But hopefully this will frame where I'm at with it and maybe guide the discussion a little bit. I suppose in the past the church has been heavily involved in social, political, and cultural issues, and it's attempted to be a redeeming force in the world, right? So steering the ship towards God's priorities and what God says is a good way. A good example, I suppose, in my head of that would be the slavery example, the slave trade. Christians were instrumental in the abolition of the slave trade, particularly in this country, but I'm sure also in the States. I'm not so familiar. I think the Quakers had a lot to do with it. And so they were really important in the movement that saw slavery outlawed in this nation. And I suppose slavery is not a primary issue, by which I mean that it's not the primary goal of the church to correct society where it's wrong, or to seek criminal justice in the world, or to reform and revolutionize governments and nations. That's not its primary job. The primary goal of the church is to share the gospel with the world. And the primary reason for that is to bring people to repentance and into a saving relationship with Jesus, which brings God glory, right? But it doesn't mean that the church turns its back when there are issues in the world, in our society, because although they're not primary issues, reforming wrongful and harmful behaviour is part of what it means to be God's people in a secular world. So Christians fought to abolish slavery because it was harmful and it was a wrong practice, which is not acceptable in God's kingdom. So then, going over to environmentalism, if, and this is an if that we should talk about, if the experts are to be believed, I suppose environmentalism, the issues to do with the environment, are not just going to harm a certain people group, as terrible and unacceptable as that is, but these environmental damages in the end could cause widespread disaster that ultimately makes life very difficult or even impossible in some locations. The potential damage is huge. The numbers of people, animals, the ecological systems that will be affected is enormous. So my question is, I suppose, why is the church not leading the way in steering the ship away from this damage and harm? Is it not part of our duty as those commanded to care for our world and for our neighbours to be steering the ship away from something like that? So that's all I had in terms of a little introduction and a starting point question, but we might not want to start with that final question. You might want to jump into some of the other assumptions or things that I said. Graham, do you want to kick off and give any thoughts after that long speech?
Yeah, I think your assumption is right in that if it was a clear matter of justice, then as much as we can, Christians would want to influence for justice and for good. I think to do with environmentalism, it's really hard to work out exactly what's going on. It's such a complex, multifaceted, multinational kind of thing that it's not one simple strategy that says, you know, here's a wrongful conviction or here's an injustice that took place, we need to campaign against it. Here's a terrible practice like, you know, sex trafficking or something, we need to be against it as a church. That's straightforward. When it comes to fishing or having a coal-fired power station, it's not a moral issue in quite the same way. So I think working our way back to it, and then maybe some other things we could say, but mm-hmm. sort of real quick, God made the world. God put us in charge of the world, Adam and Eve, to rule and subdue. So we do have a role. And I think as the Bible sort of unfolds, there's a kind of responsibility thing going on, even with, you know, animals allowed to eat the grain while they're walking it, even with Jubilee years for fields and stuff. There's a sense that the Israel weren't supposed to be over farming, but they were supposed to be farming.
Right.
And I think some of the assumptions of environmentalists are that men and women are not supposed to be there, that actually the world is absolutely perfect if only we weren't there kind of polluting it. So I think there's a wrong assumption there in that we are supposed to be ruling and subduing. You know, when Cain or Abel cut down their first tree, you know, they're already doing environmental damage, aren't they? And so I think there's a kind of theological mistake that environmentalists make to do with that. But I think the other theological mistake is that so they're not accepting that humans are supposed to rule and subdue and be responsible, but they're also not accepting the fall, which means that everything is not in perfect harmony. There's a kind of narrative, it's the David Attenborough, but it's also a little bit in that sea documentary, Seaspiracy, mm-hmm. that everything will be all right as long as we weren't there. That everything will be in perfect equilibrium. And I'm just not sure that would be the case, mm-hmm. because none of the animals are responsible. You know, they're not saying this is getting slightly out of kilter, you know, we need to fish a bit less. You know, the sharks are not having little councils saying, we're overeating fish, you know, or we need to have a one child rule or something. You know, like the Chinese did. They're just not doing that. So,
how do you know so that? How do you know they're not having those conversations under the sea?
Because
there's not a council going on in the depths. Partly
a theological answer. Okay. They're not made in God's image, but also a practical one that there's no evidence of any outcomes of that nature. As far as
I've just been watching too much Disney.
There is a little funny moment where he's digging up plastic on a beach and he finds Nemo in the centre. There's a plastic Nemo that he digs up as rubbish on the beach. So, yeah, I suppose those things to kind of surround the discussion. So then you get down to, okay, so we're supposed to rule and look after the world, which means we need to be responsible, mm-hmm. but it's a broken world. It's really hard then to get into all the kind of science of it. I don't know what you think, Mark.
Yeah, it's interesting because you feel the responsibility to be a good steward, which I can do individually. I find it much harder to kind of think about, okay, do I want to then become a campaigner on a justice issue in the same way that we had, you know, William Wilberforce did on the slave issue? You know, like I think it's just not as clear. And then at the same time, we want to be teaching, preaching that we are called to model, steward and care for the creation. And I think it works out, where do you go for that, bearing in mind all that Graham has said?
Like what are the outcomes of that? If that is the church's attitude, that you know, that is a statement that you want to agree with and promote, that we should be caring and looking after. Like what I suppose are the practical implications of that?
Yeah.
I think you should farm in a sustainable way, and I think you should burn fuel in a sustainable way.
Do you think we're doing that now?
I think it's really hard to work out whether that's going on. Mm-hmm. The book that I mentioned a few weeks ago, Apocalypse Never, I think it's called, was kind of making the point it gets really complicated, where you might say not cutting down the Amazon rainforest is really terrible. And then you kind of look at all the signs of it, and it's maybe not quite as terrible as the alternatives. You know, what if you don't do it? And so the equations get really complex. You think that, you know, building a nuclear power station in an African country would be a terrible thing to do, you know, and hydroelectric would be better. But actually, the environmental damage can be much worse from a hydroelectric station, which seems all very kind of sustainable and environmentally friendly. You even might think, well, you know, all these guys just, you know, they need to stay where they are, building little sort of charcoal fires or something, because that seems quite quaint and, you know, sustainable. And, you know, before we industrialized, that's what they were doing. But actually, compared to their little fires, a nuclear power station producing electricity is like, you know, 1,000 times more efficient in terms of sort of environmental damage. So I've read enough books now to be confused, I think, or skeptical.
Right. Yes. I mean, what I would say is, the question I would ask is, you watched that documentary, Graham.
Yeah.
Are you watching it thinking, I'm not wholesale buying what I'm hearing here about? I mean, he makes clear scientific statements about there were this many fish at this point, now there's this many, it's because of this, right? Something like that, where it's like in the 1950s or whatever, trawler boats would fish for this long in this area, they'd catch this many fish. Now they catch a fraction of that many because we've overfished, there are less fish. There's a lot about capitalism and greed and these companies that are just doing this for capital gains. Like, do you just watch that and think that's not happening?
No, I think those, that I really like the documentary because I think it was really straightforward, that I think industrial fishing where there's no responsibility for, you know, all the nets being left behind and stuff, it's really straightforward to say that's bad. And actually dumping loads of plastic in the sea, although it's not as significant as people say, you know, is not a good thing. It's clearly not a good thing. So I think those are more straightforward to talk about. I think it's where you get to things like, I don't know, there was an example in this book about elephant tusks, ivory, isn't it, it's called. Actually, to produce a plastic equivalent takes loads more energy than an elephant tusk. So you think, oh yeah, elephant tusk trade is terrible. Tusk trade is terrible. You know, plastic alternatives are better. In terms of environmental damage, plastic is much worse. So there's lots of sort of fallacies, whereas I think the fishing one's pretty straightforward. And there's some dispute about whether some of the figures were a bit localised and weren't, you know, they were sort of true of certain areas, but not of all. But I think most people accepted those figures were kind of roughly right, and that industrial fishing is not good.
But the question then comes, isn't it? If we accept that to be true, and I haven't watched a documentary, do we then, as Christians, campaign against?
Also realizing that that's just a fraction of the problem,
right?
You know,
but I mean, we also recognise that, you know, we travel on aeroplanes, trains, cars, use mobile phones, all have an environmental impact, as do washing machines, dishwashers. The very fact that we're doing Zoom now has an environmental impact.
Yeah.
So you end up having to weigh and balance all of those things up. Plus also, what do you prioritise, and, you know, where we are? But that doesn't necessarily mean you end up saying we don't care or we think this is irrelevant. So I think you could hold a, you know, this is serious and it would be good, and maybe I will call to account, you know, my MP, or, you know, there's levels that I can do that may just challenge that. That doesn't mean that it becomes the major arm campaign that the church goes on, as it were.
Yeah, and I think the documentary, in a way, illustrated part of the problem in that they were exposing the responsible tuna kind of industry, weren't they? The main brand for responsible tuna.
Dolphin-friendly. Basically,
yeah, dolphin-friendly tuna. Was basically a bit of a joke in that people pay a subscription to it, and it seems they don't really inspect it, so there's no kind of auditing process. So
it's meaningless.
Loads of dolphins were killed for one tuna.
Yeah,
there was some high number of dolphins per tuna that were being killed in the process, and so that illustrates, I suppose, the complexity. But it's
So for me, as a Christian, though, when I see that sort of thing, it makes me think, well, what argument can I give to say that I should still buy and eat that? I'm not sure I can make a good argument for that.
And I don't like tuna that much. So
You're safe. I mean, I don't eat a lot of tuna or fish, but I'm just thinking theoretically, you know, even if it's just theoretically, like, how can you still justify going to buy that product and support that industry if you know that that's happening, and then export that to other industries like the beef industry or the chicken industry? Like, it becomes really complicated, and it's something that I don't, you know, at times I think, should I be a vegan? Like, is that actually the right moral choice? Because the damage that's going, and then you get into the conversation, it's like, well, veganism actually causes its own problems because you end up needing to farm all of this extra stuff, which means you have to wipe out forests. So it's so complicated. But and that's what leaves me thinking, I don't know what, as a Christian, I'm supposed to make of all of this, really.
But there's throw in another element, though, because actually you've got the environmentalist issue there, but you compare that to, so I stop buying tuna. But am I as concerned about where my phone's made and the battery that's in that and the human rights issues that are involved there, or in the clothing that I wear? In other words, sometimes we get so caught up worrying about, you know, saving the dolphin, but that actually I'm not as concerned as I am about saving the individual, the human, who is, you know, making my clothes cheap for me.
Yeah, you can't care about everything equally, can you? Like,
And I think that, you know, the Bible calls me to have a greater concern for other humans than it does for the animals. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't care about animals, but I think there is a priority and a hierarchy in the environment. And I think, therefore, you've got to weigh those things up, even as you think about it. Now, you may be convicted for a number of reasons. You think this is just not right. You have a particular affinity and affection. But I think where the danger becomes is when we start imposing that as a kind of right, everyone should do that. Because everyone's come to it. Because I think there is a freedom within these things still.
It's like when fair trade coffee came in. I remember some Christians sort of being quite huffy with other Christians. Either they were buying fair trade coffee or they weren't.
Right.
And it's one of those complicated brands as well, where you never quite know what it really means anyway. But yeah, that judgmentalism comes in. I think it's like a lot of things to do with proximity and to do with clarity. So if you know, you dropping a bit of litter in the street, you know, you've got a kind of moral responsibility, and it's clearly it's kind of environmentally damaging the street for somebody else. And so that's really clear. How many plastic bags you have in general and throw away is a bit closer. You know, what's happening in the world as a whole with fishing is a bit more distant. And having fish in principle is not wrong any more than having beef, you know, is wrong in principle.
Or pork.
Well, pork, yeah, pork or beef. But yeah, I mean, thinking particularly beef to do with farming the rainforest and everything.
Yeah.
So I think you've got to work out how close am I to it and how clearly is it a bad thing.
But why is your proximity to it relevant? Because, I mean, what I would say scares me about...
Your participation in it, I suppose,
okay.
I'm trying to say.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I suppose to circle back to where we started, part of the reason why I feel that these issues are important is not because... I think what you said, Mark, is right about caring about humans above animals. But I think the point of the documentary is not that we need to love dolphins so much. It's that this is ultimately causing so much ecological damage that it's going to get back to harming humans eventually. If we destroy our planet, we're destroying humans. Yeah. So on that kind of level, at what point do you think... I mean, what is there a problem here? Is the church involved enough in this? Am I overestimating the problem, or other people who are making these docs overestimating the problem? Is there something that we should be doing about it, or do we just not really need to worry about it too much? That's my question.
Yeah, I was pretty convinced that the science was the sea is much more significant than the rainforest in producing oxygen and getting rid of carbon dioxide. And I was reasonably convinced that you can't unsustainably fish for a very long time without causing enough global damage, the what to do is just really hard.
Yeah.
This is going to sound like the most despairing podcast we've done in a while. Like, you get to sit and say, we don't know what to do.
But I think that it's highlighting the complexity of the issue.
Yeah, it's complicated.
That actually there is a reality where there isn't anything one can do. I think what we can do is be good stewards where we are. Mm. So I can be a good steward of the resources that the Lord has given me. Mm-hmm. And then I need to make wise choices before him, seeking as I can to balance. And it may be that for some, you know, you realise, well, actually, I'm not going to eat tuna anymore because of that, and I'm convicted by that, or I'm not going to eat meat because of those reasons. But I think it's working that out on our own before the Lord, recognising that I do have a freedom, there are stewardship principles that I can only do so. I'm only finite. I can't solve the world's problems.
Yep.
And I think often we think we're the Messiah that can fix everything, and the world is decaying. The world is in bondage. It is under the fall. So things are going to get worse. Yeah. Is that all to do with environmentalism? Is that just the reality of a broken world as well? So all of those...
Just entropy, isn't it? Entropy.
Well, absolutely. It's all of those things that are at play, which makes it even harder. And I think that's where you've got to keep thinking, what's the main thing? Seems to me the main thing is, you know, Jesus says it's love God, love people. They're the priorities. Mm-hmm. Now, in loving people, it may be that I need to be a good steward because it helps to maintain sustainability, protection of environments where people live.
It's like fixing your roof, like you were saying on Sunday.
Right. So all those things begin to play out in that way. But I think, like in all, you know, I think sometimes I can get more worked up about what's happening to, you know, a coral reef than I can about the Uyghur people in China. You know, and I think sometimes we get out of whack on that. Just it's all those factors bearing in mind as we seek to land this.
Mm-hmm.
Do your research. We'd encourage, definitely encourage as a Christian, do your research, because there is a degree of responsibility. Mm. And read around the topic, not just one program that tells you.
Yeah.
You know, paper bags, really complicated science to do with paper bags.
Mm-hmm.
We all think, oh, we're being great if we're having paper bags, you know, used once. The amount of energy to produce a paper bag compared to a plastic one is more.
Right.
So it depends a lot on how much you reuse your plastic bags as to whether it ends up being better than
the paper. What
would
be a good entry-level book to read on this thing, Graham, that you would go, hey, okay, here's something that will just begin to help you think in a different way of being a good steward. When you want to get your understanding...
One I read a few years ago is called Ellis for Lifestyle.
Yeah, I was thinking that one.
Which went through the alphabet, actually. You know, B is for banana, remember that? I can't remember what the other letters were, which at least made you think about lots of different areas, beginning with different letters of the alphabet, to kind of reflect on, including the banana trade. So that's a good entry-level book.
Is that a Christian? Yes. Right, okay.
Yeah, she used to work for Tear Fund, I think, the lady who wrote it.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, are Christians writing about this sort of thing?
Not an awful lot. There tend to be sort of blogs and smaller articles. I can't think of a book. That Apocalypse Never book is not a Christian book. Mm-hmm. And it's quite long. It's kind of entry-level in a way, but it's just very long entry-level. But it goes through lots and lots of different topics. I think it's more, there's not one book. I think it's reading around kind of blogs and, mm-hmm. you know, listening to stuff, but try and read around a range, I would say.
And if there are Christian books out there that we've, writers who have written on this that we've missed, then send us an email, I suppose, because it'd be cool to know about those. And I'm sure Graham will read it.
I will.
Well, thanks for listening to this episode of Ordinary. If you did want to get in touch about anything you've heard on this episode, then email us, ordinary@cchh.org.uk is the address. We'd love to hear from you. If you are enjoying the podcast, it would really help us if you left us a review or shared it with your friends and family. And come back next week. There'll be another brand new episode waiting for you. See you next time.